Doak Walker, a Western Short, written by M.D. Rhodes, narrated by Jack Socket. Chapter 1.
You gonna fix that busted fence today?
Wyatt Snow, my foreman, spoke.
I might, I said, rather hateful. Right after I run into town and take care of a little business. What kind of business you got in town?
If you must know, it's personal, and don't concern you, so just butt out and take care of your own business.
I reckon I can do that, he says. You know, you can't keep shirking your chores like this. I'm getting too blamed old to do mine and yours. Can't that trip to town wait till you get the fence mended?
I guess, since you put it that way, I'll take care of it now.
I hooked up the wagon and loaded all the posts, wire, and the rest of the stuff I needed. I'm going to grab a bite to eat before I head out.
Okay, but you're burning daylight.
I know what time it is, I snapped at him.
I drained the last of the pot into my cup and finished it off, wiping my mouth with the back of my hand.
Well, I reckon I better get started. See you around sundown.
I jumped up in the wagon, hollered to the team, and the wagon started moving.
Hold on! You forgot this!
He tossed a canteen to me. I caught it and waved him as we pulled around the corner of the house. I wasn't hardly out of sight, and my shirt was already soaked with sweat. I removed my hat and wiped my forehead with my sleeve. I sure wasn't looking forward to this job. Sometimes I think having a job in town would be better than this. But then I'd think about being cooped up inside all day, and think this is probably better for somebody like me. Being stuck inside all the time would be too much like jail for me. It took 3 long days to repair that busted fence. I wish we still had enough hands to do this kind of stuff, but we don't. Ever since Pa died, things have gone downhill. Amos and Angus Cantrell and, of course, Wyatt Snow, the foreman, were the only ones who stuck with us. The twins were out tending the cattle, which was quite a chore. I couldn't ask them to do something I could do myself, so here I am twisting wire and repairing the fence. Each day, a little after sundown, I headed to the house where I gobbled down whatever Wyatt set in front of me and went straight to bed. Didn't even take my clothes off. Wyatt woke me early each morning before sunup. When I twisted that last piece of wire, I leaned on the post and looked back at the patch fence. I felt a little proud of the job I'd done. I figured Pa would be proud, too. He always had a hard time getting me to do anything. But Pa's gone now, and I gotta buck up and act like an owner of this broken-down ranch. It was supper time when I rolled into the yard. Amos was just coming out of the house.
Howdy, Doak, he said. You get that fence patched?
Yes, I did. And I'm glad it's done, I replied.
How's the cows doing? Got plenty of grass?
We had to move them over the next pasture. The grass done wore plumb to the ground. Gonna take a heap of rain to get it to come back. Reckon I better get it out there so Angus come and eat it. See you later.
He waved as he climbed in the saddle, spurred his horse, and left the yard at a gallop. I went to the house, and Wyatt asked,
Get her all fixed up?
Yeah, and I don't need nobody to go and check to see if I'd done it right. I done a good job.
Wasn't gonna say nothing, he shot back. You gonna wash up and eat before you head into town?
I figured I'd eat at the cafe in town and maybe get a bath at the barber shop, I said. If you don't mind, that is.
Would it make any difference if I did mind? I reckon you're a grown man, and you're gonna do what you want no matter what anybody says.
I'm leaving as soon as I saddle my horse. Be gone a couple days, maybe more. You can handle everything without me, can't you?
Why don't you wait till morning? Take the wagon and pick up supplies while you're there, he said. Should be something at the feed store.
What's at the feed store? I asked.
Can't remember, but there's always something.
Okay. I reckon I can wait till morning. You got any grub and coffee?
Sit yourself down and I'll get you something.
You need anything from town? I asked.
I can't think of nothing, but I do wish you wouldn't wear your guns to town, he said mournfully. Them guns get you killed one of these days.
Like you said, I'm a grown man, and a man don't go no place without his guns. Besides, you know I'm very good with them.
Yeah, I know how much time you spent practicing, and I also know you think you're good. But remember this, there's always somebody a little bit better, a little bit faster, and I need you to come home alive, preferably. I'll be careful. With that, I turned and went into my room, splashed a little water on my face, undressed, and passed out on the bed. Wyatt didn't wake me the next morning, so it was late when I awoke.
How come you didn't wake me? I fussed at him.
I figured a growing boy needs his rest. Sit down and eat something before you go. By the way, that's the last of the bacon.
I finished off the eggs and bacon with about 4 cups of Wyatt's coffee and rushed out the front door, climbed in the wagon where I left it sit overnight, slapped the reins against the rump of the horse, and headed for town. Chapter 2. The ride to town wasn't very exciting, but I held the reins lightly and let the horses make their own speed. I leaned against the back of the seat and cast my eyes toward the heavens. I was always amazed at God's creation whenever I took the time to gaze at the clouds and the way they seemed to change shape as I looked at them. They almost blocked out the sun, which made me wish for this cloud cover when I was repairing the fence. It was sure a peaceful feeling, and I wished I could bottle it and keep it with me forever, but that's just dreaming. 'Cause the bottom line is life is more than a few daydreams. It seems something always comes along and spoils it. I straighten up as we reach the outskirts of town. The sign read, "You're now entering Crockett, Texas. Population 507. I drove to the livery stable where old man Garrett was standing in the doorway, whittling on a chunk of wood. He looked up at me, saw me, folded his knife, put it in his shirt pocket.
"Howdy, Duke. I thought you'd be in town afore this."
"Had a little chore to do first, but I'm here now. Anything happening I should know about?" I asked him.
"There's a hard case coming to town yesterday. Done killed that young kid Lenny Buchholter. You know, the one always acting like he was a fast gun? If I ain't you, I wouldn't go in that saloon."
"That's just it, Mr. Garrett. You ain't me," I told him as I looked at the floor. "What'd the sheriff do about it?"
"You know Sheriff Blasingame. He done what he always does,"
he said, shaking his head.
"Nothing. Said it was self-defense."
"You reckon somebody ought to have a talk with this man?" I asked.
"Yeah, I reckon. But I don't reckon it ought to be you," he said. "Why you won't get involved?"
"Like I said, somebody needs to talk to him," I told him, turned and started toward the saloon. I stopped and said, "Take care of my wagon, will you?"
"Sure thing. But I still say you ought to stay out of it."
The saloon was extremely quiet for this time of day. Didn't even hear any piano music. I stepped up on the boardwalk and stopped to peer over the doors. A dark hombre with dusty black clothes and a .45 slung low on his hip was leaning against the bar with a glass in his hand facing the crowd, if you could call it a crowd. Only 2 people in there with this yahoo. I pushed through the doors and stopped just inside.
"Well, looky here," the man said.
We got us real fancy gunmen come to see us. You are here to see us, ain't you, kid?
That depends, I said calmly, releasing the leather tie down from the hammer of my pistol.
You better think over what you're doing, the man said a little loudly.
I thought it over, and all I see is a lowlife that gunned down a young kid without giving him a chance.
You mean that snot-nosed kid that threw down on me when I came into town? That who you talking about? Sheriff done called it self-defense.
Our sheriff don't always see the big picture. The man had an icy tone to his voice that sent cold chills down my spine, but I had gone too far to back down now, so I straightened up and said as calmly as I could, I reckon it's your move, stranger. He was fast, really fast, but I was a tad faster. He had barely cleared leather when the slug from my .45 entered just to the right of his heart. He looked down as the crimson stain spread across his shirt. Then he looked up at me and mouthed the words, You can't kill me. You're just a kid. Then he slumped forward into the sawdust floor right after his gun slipped from his hand. The blood quickly made a puddle that the sawdust soaked up. The saloon doors burst open and the sheriff Blassingame rushed in with his gun in his hand. He stopped when he saw the dead body, then turned to face me.
You do this, Walker?
He asked, holding his gun toward me. I reckon I did. Seems the law in this town wanted to let this scum stay in town and threaten the folks.
Maybe you better come to the office with me, and let's have a little talk.
He waved his gun, indicating I should follow him. I removed the spent cartridge from the cylinder and replaced it with a new one, then slid my gun into the holster. I looked at the sheriff still holding his weapon in my direction. I'm more than willing to go with you on one condition, I told him.
What condition?
Holster your hog leg and I'll follow you to the jail. He did as I asked, shaking his head as if he didn't realize he was holding a gun. He took off out the door of the saloon and I followed. Chapter 3. We reached the jail and he opened the door and motioned for me to go ahead of him. I did, stopping just inside the door and stepping to the side as he entered. He walked to his desk, sat down and removed his hat, placing it on the tabletop.
How come you did that?
He asked, looking into my eyes.
I would have run him out of town if there had been any more trouble.
Sheriff, I understand this is a tough job, but sometimes somebody like me needs to help. I understand he killed Lenny Burkhalter. You know yourself that Lenny wasn't no match for somebody like him.
I want you to listen to me, and listen real close. I'm the law here in Crockett, and I'll say who stays or goes in this town, and you better keep those guns of yours in the holsters, or I might have to lock you up. Now get out of here.
I was leaving the jail when I noticed three men ride up and stop in front of the saloon. It seems the town was attracting the scum today. They were very noisy as they went inside. I started across the street when I saw him. He was a giant of a man with long, curly red hair and beard. He was dressed in dirty buckskins, wearing thigh-high moccasins, and was carrying an old-fashioned cap and ball rifle. One look into his steel gray eyes told me he was in town on business.
What kind of business?
I was pretty sure I knew. I had heard recently that a squaw married to a white man had been murdered. It hadn't been a quick death. It was long and dragged out, no doubt inflicting much pain before she passed from this world. I'd also heard that the three men who did it were going around bragging how that squaw squealed and hollered before she died. I found that hard to believe. I had seen more of my share of Indians die, both men and women.
Not a one of them squealed or hollered. Instead, they died spitting in the face of their killer. I walked up to the red giant and introduced myself. I'm Doak Walker. I guess you're looking for three men? He nodded without telling his name. There's three of them. That old flintlock of yours ain't gonna be much good after the first shot. You'll surely die trying. If I was you, and I'm not, but I would accept any help that was offered. He spoke for the first time.
You offer it?
I reckon I am. Those men are in the saloon right across the street. Anytime you're ready, I am too. He nodded and stepped into the street, heading for the saloon with purpose in his steps. I had to hustle to match his giant steps. We reached the front of the saloon. As he started to step up on the boardwalk, I said, "Hold on a minute. We need some kind of plan before we go in there. What'd you say I take the one on your left? You take the one on the right? That'll leave the one in the middle. If I'm still standing, I'll take him too." He cocked the flintlock, poured a little powder in the pocket, and went through the door with me right behind him. He moved to the right of the door, and I slid to the left. The room got deathly quiet. The men we were looking for slammed down their glasses and turned.
"Well, well, looky here, Virgil,"
the greasy-haired man spoke through broken, rotten teeth.
"It looks like a mountain man. I hear they favor squaw meat. Is that right, squaw man? You partial to squaw meat?"
"Take it easy," I said quietly. "He's trying to rattle you. When I give the word, you lift that rifle and fire." I spoke to the men.
"You boys caught up on your praying?"
"We don't pray,"
a second weasel-faced man said quickly. "Why are you asking that?"
"'Cause the three of you are going to meet your maker today."
They reached for their weapons, and just as quickly, the three men were lying in the sawdust as the crimson-colored liquid began to puddle under and around them. I looked at my new friend, and he looked at me while he reloaded his rifle. I rejected the spent cartridges and replaced them. I had just slid my pistol in the holster when the saloon doors were flung open, and the sheriff rushed into the room with his .45 in his hand.
"All right," he said with authority. "What's going on here? Walker, you involved in this? I thought you heard me when I told you..."
"I heard you, Sheriff. But this here is a special case."
"I don't care about no special case. I told you I would lock you up, and that's what I'm gonna do."
He pointed his weapon toward me and my new friend. I looked at the giant, expecting him to speak up, but he remained stone-faced silent.
"It was self-defense, Sheriff," I told him. "You can ask anybody." "I don't need to ask nobody nothing," he said, looking around the room. "In fact, why don't the two of you lay your weapons on the bar and let's take a walk over to the jail?"
The giant cocked his rifle, which caused the sheriff to swing his pistol to cover the man. "Hold on, partner," I said, laying my hand on his arm. "Let's not make this any worse than it is. The sheriff is only doing his job. Ain't that right, Sheriff?" I could see his hand shaking as he said,
"That's right. Just doing my job. Now you fellas come on peaceable-like."
The giant uncocked his rifle, but didn't place it on the bar. Instead, he settled it across his arms. "Come on," I told him. "Let's go with this lawman. We'll be out of there in no time at all." Chapter 4 The sheriff holstered his gun and turned, expecting us to follow.
"Man, ain't got a lot of sense turning his back on us like that," growled the giant.
"Come on," I said, and started following behind the sheriff. We entered the jail right behind the sheriff. He walked over and sat down at his desk,
then turned around facing us. I noticed his eye twitch as he spoke.
You gentlemen want to tell me how come there's 3 dead bodies in the saloon?
Again, I looked at my friend, expecting him to answer. I think I can explain, Sheriff, I spoke up. Those 3 men killed this man's wife. They've been bragging about it for a couple weeks now. This man came to town looking for them, and he found them. If you'll bother talking to the witnesses that saw what happened, you'll find it was self-defense. It's a simple matter if you'll look into it.
If it was this man's wife, as you said, what's your interest in all this, especially after our little talk?
I could see he was outnumbered. I always figured a fight should be fair, so I stepped in.
What's your name, stranger?
He looked at the giant. The man didn't say anything, just stood there like a wooden Indian. I reached over and touched his arm. Do you know your name? He turned those steel gray eyes toward me as a silver tear slid down his cheek and shook his head. Sheriff, I don't think he remembers his name. He's been in the mountains a long time.
Surely he's got a name. What am I going to put in the paperwork?
Why don't you put Red Walker?
Ain't that your name, Walker?
Yeah, that's my name, and I'll be mighty proud to share it with my new friend. Is that okay with you, Red? Looking up into his eyes. He straightened up to his full height, sniffed and smiled with the whitest teeth I've ever seen. He looked at the sheriff and proclaimed,
My name is Red Walker.
All right, Mr. Walker, sheriff said. The 2 Walkers, I reckon you can go. But would you do something for me, Walker?
Sure, sheriff, I said. What can we do for you?
Please don't shoot nobody else, at least not in my town.
We'll do our best to stay out of trouble. I tipped my hat, turned, touched Red on the arm, and we left together. We had just stepped off the sidewalk when I saw her coming out of the general store. Hold on a minute, Red. I need to do something, but I don't want to leave you. I want to talk to you about going back to the ranch with me, but right now I need to go see someone. We stay in town until we talk? He nodded his head and sat down on the sidewalk. Chapter 5 I rushed across the street and caught up with her just as she stepped off the sidewalk. Where are you going? I asked her. Why don't you come up and sit with me on the swing? I'd like to talk to you.
I've got someplace I need to be, she said. But if you're still here when I come back, I'd be proud to sit with you.
Is this place you got to be very far?
Not far, but I got to hurry. I'm running late as it is, she said, turning away. Like I said, if you're here when I come back, I'll sit with you.
How about I go with you?
No, I don't think you should. This is something personal I have to do, and really, I don't think you would enjoy yourself.
I just want to be with you. What's wrong with that?
Nothing, I reckon. But this is personal, like I said. It doesn't concern you.
Let me be the judge of that.
Okay, but I don't think you should.
I took her arm and said, All right, lead the way. She looked up at me and shook her head, pulled her arm loose, then took off at a brisk pace. Wait a minute, what's the hurry?
I told you I was late.
So if you're coming, keep up. She hurried down the street and turned into the alley beside the feed store. She slowed when she reached the back of the window. She craned her neck and looked around the corner. What you looking for? I asked.
Nothing really. Just looking.
As she stepped around the corner and headed for the back door of the feed store, she stepped up on the small porch and reached for the doorknob. It was locked. She stepped off the porch and looked around, then spotted a window about halfway up the back wall.
Lift me up to that window so as I can look inside. Will you tell me what's going on?
Please, she begged with her voice and her slate-blue eyes.
All right. Put your foot in my hands, and I'll lift you up as high as I can. She placed her tiny foot in my hands, and I lifted.
A little higher, she said.
I strained and lifted a little more. What do you see? As I held her up by the small window.
I can't see anything. It's too dark, she said. Hold on a minute. There's something in front of the door. It could be a body. Let me down. Let's try the door again.
I let her down, and she rushed to the door, twisting and pulling on the knob. We done tried that, and nothing changed since then, I exclaimed. What do you mean, a body? You gonna tell me what's going on? I asked her as she tried the doorknob again.
Oh, all right, she shrugged her shoulders. I reckon since you're here, you're gonna know sooner or later. Mr. Flannery is a killer, she said emphatically.
Why would you say something like that? I asked, surprised at her accusation. Why would you say that?
I heard him and Mr. Ferguson arguing, and Mr. Flannery shouted he was going to kill him,
she said with a certainty in her voice. Lots of folks say things they don't mean.
But Mr. Ferguson didn't show up for work this morning over at the freight office. There were tears in her eyes as she spoke.
Okay, don't cry on me, I said. Why don't you go inside the store and into the back room?
And what would I tell Mr. Flannery about going in his back room?
I guess you're right. He'd be suspicious, especially if he killed him. She twisted the doorknob again.
It's still locked. I've got to do something, she whined. He's a murderer. I got no doubt about that. Wait a cotton-picking minute. I know how we can check the back room.
How? I asked.
You go in and start talking to Mr. Flannery, and I'll slip in and go into the back.
She was excited. What am I supposed to talk about?
Well, you are the owner of a ranch. Talk to him about feed for your cattle, or you'll think of something. Come on, let's go.
She grabbed my hand and started pulling me toward the front of the building. We reached the door, and she got as close to the wall as she could.
Go on in and start talking. Try to get his back to the door, and I'll slip by. He'll never see me.
She gave me a little shove. Okay, but you be careful, will you?
Of course. Careful is my middle name, she said. Now go ahead.
I went inside and walked right up to the stand beside Mr. Flannery, where he was bent over behind the counter. He stood and gave a little squawk.
Don't you know better than to slip up on my body? Almost gave me a heart attack. What can I do for you, Walker, ain't it? Frank Walker's boy?
Yes, sir. That's who I am, Doak Walker.
Sorry about your pa. He was a good man. Always paid his bills right on time. Understand you're the one I'll be dealing with from now on.
Yes, sir. That's right. And right now, I'd like to look at some feed. I heard you have a special mixture that's supposed to help the cattle gain weight.
Sure do. Right over here.
He turned to face the front of the building just as Imogene started in the door. I reached and grabbed his arm, maybe a little too hard, because he turned, putting his back to her.
What did you do that for? He asked, rubbing his arm.
I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't know my own strength. Did I hurt you?
No harm done, I reckon. How come you grabbed me? I thought you wanted to see that special mixture.
I do. But first I wanted you to check and see if there's a special order for the ranch. Snow said something about it when I left.
No, ain't nothing on order. He says what it was?
No, you probably got it mixed up. He's been doing that a lot lately. I watched as Imogene slipped past and into the back room. I took a deep breath and said,
I reckon we can look at that special mix now.
We walked across the room, and he said,
This is it. I'm mighty proud of it. It's going to make things a whole lot easier for fattening up the cattle.
How much is it going to cost? I asked, looking at the door to the back room.
Well, since you're the new owner of the Walker Spread, and you'll be the first one to buy a batch of this special mix, I'm going to give you a really good deal.
He was smiling from ear to ear.
Maybe I better talk it over with Snow, After all, he's really the one in charge of that kind of stuff,
I said, turning and heading for the front door.
But I thought you was the owner, he stammered.
I am, but I'm still learning. Thanks for showing that mix to me. I'll let you know what we decide. I hurried out the door and turned and ran down the alley. Imogene was sitting on the little porch with her head in her hands. Her face was as white as a ghost. You okay? I asked, sitting beside her and touching her shoulder. She turned and threw her arms around me.
He's in there. He's dead.
You saw him? I asked, enjoying her arms around me.
Yes. His body was blocking the door. That's why we couldn't get it open. I pulled it to the side and came out. We've got to do something.
We'll figure it out, I told her. Have you told Sheriff Blasingame?
No. And I don't know if I want to or not, she said, shaking her head. Everybody knows what a lazy good-for-nothing he is.
But he is the sheriff, I told her. I don't think it would hurt to approach him and feel him out. Maybe this'll be the one time he does the right thing. Come on, I'll go with you.
Chapter 6 I took her hand and we headed back through the alley and down the street to the sheriff's office. He was halfway out the door when he looked and saw us heading in his direction.
What do you guys want now, Walker? You ain't shooting no more folks, have you?
No, Sheriff. I ain't shot nobody since the last one. Me and Imogene here got something you need to hear. Can we go back in your office?
I can't imagine what you two kids would have to say that's so important, but come on, I'll listen.
He stepped inside, leaving the door ajar, indicating we should come inside. He stomped across the floor and settled in his chair behind the paper-littered basket. He calmly lifted his boots and placed them on the corner of the desk, knocking some of the papers on the floor.
Okay, he said, yawning to show us he really wasn't interested in anything we had to say.
I'm listening.
Go ahead, Imogene, I said. Tell him. She opened her mouth and then closed it, looking at me as if she wanted me to tell him, so I began. We think there's been a murder. And we know who done it. Sheriff Blasingame dropped one boot to the floor and asked, in his unconcerned voice,
who got murdered and who done it?
Mr. Flannery killed Mr. Ferguson,
Imogene blurted out as if she couldn't keep it inside no more. Now the sheriff dropped his other foot to the floor and started to stand, then sat back down in the chair.
You talking about Flannery, the feed store owner?
He asked with surprise.
Yes, said Imogene. He killed him.
He's supposed to have killed Ferguson, the clerk at the freight office? That's what you're saying?
That's what we're saying, said Imogene excitedly.
You both loco. Them two men have been friends for years. Besides, Flannery is one of the leading citizens of this town. He even ran for mayor last election.
But I heard him threaten to kill him, Imogene said.
Hold on a cotton-picking minute. You saying what I think you saying?
He looked at both of us with a questioning look on his face.
You didn't actually see anybody kill anybody. Is that what you're saying?
But, Sheriff, I did see the dead body.
Imogene was whining again.
Ain't you even going to look into it?
Did you see the dead body, Walker?
He asked, looking directly at me. Well, I hesitated.
I didn't think so. I ought to lock the two of you up and throw away the key. You should know better than to come in here and accuse one of the town's leading citizens of killing his friend. Now get on out of here, or I might just throw you in that cell back yonder. Go on, get.
Come on, Imogene. I took her hand and started for the door.
You don't need to be spreading them rumors around town either, or I will lock you up. You hear me?
We hear you, I told him as we left the building.
I told you he was good for nothing, said Imogene. Now what are we going to do?
We'll think of something, don't worry, I assured her. She stopped quickly, jerking her hand from mine.
I know who we can tell. She was grinning. Mrs. Benefield.
The mayor's wife, I asked. What makes you think she'll listen any more than the sheriff?
We have to convince her. If we can convince her, then she can convince the mayor, and then we'll see justice at work.
She took my hand again and started pulling me to the east end of town where the wealthy folks lived. The mayor's house was at the far end of the street and was one of the better houses on the street.
You sure about this? I asked her, stopping just outside the little gate. We could just forget about it. It really ain't none of our concern, after all.
When the law has been broken, it should be the concern of all law-abiding citizens to see that the wrong has been righted, she said, reaching down, sliding the little wire off the gate and pushing it open. Come on, Doak. Don't quit on me now.
She looked at me with those slate-blue eyes, and right at that moment, I would have walked across burning coals to please her. I stepped through the gate and followed her to the front door. She lifted her hand to knock, then hesitated. Having second thoughts, are you?
No,
she said, and proceeded to knock.
Just a minute, a woman's voice from inside said.
Chapter 7. The door opened, and a gray-haired lady in her late 40s, dressed in a blue and white dress, asked,
Why, hello there, Imogene. And you? You're Doak Walker, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am, that's right, I said, removing my hat and twisting it in my hands.
Well, don't stand there on the porch. Come on in. I was just making a pitcher of lemonade. Would you care for a glass?
She turned back and asked with inquiring eyes. That sounds real nice. Thank you, ma'am, I said.
Have a seat there on the settee. I'll get some glasses and see if I can scare up some cookies, too. Be right back.
She hurried from the room. Are you going to tell her, or are you going to lay it off on me like you did with the sheriff? I asked her.
I'll tell her. I just have to find the right words, she said. But you could maybe be a little more supportive.
I'm here, ain't I? Can't get more supportive than that, I don't reckon. Mrs. Benefield came in carrying a tray of three glasses filled to the brim with this golden liquid, and right beside the glasses were some sugar cookies, my favorite.
Here you go,
she said, handing Imogene a glass and then one to me.
Help yourself to the cookies. That is, if you want some.
Oh, yeah, I said, grabbing a couple cookies and taking a bite. Mmm, these are great.
I'm glad you like them. Now, what did you want to tell me?
She looked first at me, then at Imogene.
It sounded very important.
It is important, rushed Imogene, placing her glass back on the tray.
A man has been murdered, and the sheriff won't even listen to us.
I see, Mrs. Benefield said.
Who was murdered? Mr. Flannery killed Mr. Ferguson,
Imogene was whining.
I know he did.
How do you know this? Asked Mrs. Benefield. Did you see him do this horrible thing?
No, ma'am. I didn't see him do it, but I know he did. I did see Mr. Ferguson's body in the back of the feed store. All right, calm down and tell me everything from the beginning. Well, I was on my way home from a late night of choir practice at the church, and I heard them in the alley by the feed store. I slowed down and hopped up on the sidewalk and pressed myself against the wall. They were both arguing about something. I never did hear what it was about, but then I heard just as plain as I'm hearing you right now, Mr. Flannery said in a slow, even voice, quieter than before, I'm going to kill you. I'd heard enough, so I slid along the wall in the opposite direction until I was away from them, and I hurried home the long way.
Are you sure that's what he said? Mrs. Benefield asked calmly. You couldn't be mistaken, could you?
I heard it very clearly. I'm going to kill you.
You went to the sheriff's and he didn't believe you, is that correct?
Yes. He even threatened to lock us up if we told anybody else.
He said Mr. Flannery was a model citizen and we better stop telling lies about him. What made you think I would believe you any more than the sheriff?
She asked, looking at me and then at Imogene.
You have to believe us, Imogene cried. If you do, you can tell your husband, and then he can make the sheriff do something.
I'm not sure Albert can make the sheriff do anything, but I can. She stood and said,
let me get my wrap, and let's go talk to our sheriff.
She disappeared into the other room and came back with her purse and shawl, which she wrapped around her shoulders. She then motioned for us to follow as she opened the door and stepped outside.
Close the door behind you,
she ordered, and continued on out to the street. Imogene and I had to hurry to keep up with her. The sheriff wasn't in the jail when we arrived.
I think I know where he is.
Come on. We left the sheriff's office and started walking south on Main Street. Stopping in front of Mildred's Eatery, she peered in the window.
There he is, stuffing his face.
She opened the door and stepped inside, indicating we should wait. We watched as she approached the sheriff's table. He looked up, saw her, and jumped to attention, just like a private in the cavalry knocking over his cup of coffee. Mrs. Benefield said something, turned, and headed back out the door. The sheriff stood for a moment, picked up his napkin, wiped the spilled coffee, put on his hat, and followed behind her. When he saw Imogene and myself, his look could have killed if it had been a weapon.
Let's all go to the sheriff's office, shall we?
Mrs. Benefield started toward the jail. Chapter 8. Inside the jail, she indicated the sheriff sit at his desk. He started to say something, and Mrs. Benefield shushed him, just like a child.
Clarence, she began, it has come to my attention that a crime has been committed, and you aren't interested in pursuing the matter. Is that correct?
You've been listening to the tale these kids are telling? They're just a couple of troublemakers. You know as well as I do that Flannery is an upright citizen of this town.
That may be true, but an investigation should be done to see if there is any merit to these accusations, she said emphatically.
But
don't dawdle, Clarence. Come on. We'll go talk to Henry right now.
She turned and headed out the door.
You two are in a lot of trouble,
he said between clenched teeth as he passed us following Mrs. Benefield out the door.
Howdy, Mrs. Benefield. Sheriff,
Flannery said as we entered the store.
What can I do for you?
Go ahead, Sheriff,
Mrs. Benefield said with a stern look.
Henry,
Blassingame began.
It seems that someone,
he looked at Imogene and me,
somebody had accused you of something. Now, mind you, I ain't accusing you of nothing, but as a sheriff, I've got to do this.
What has I been accused of?
Flannery asked, surprised.
You killed Mr. Ferguson, Imogene yelled. I heard you tell him, and I saw the body in the back room.
You plumb crazy, Flannery said.
Me and Bert are best friends. I wouldn't do nothing to hurt him, let alone kill him. I'm insulted that you would even consider this, Clarence.
I know how we can clear this up very easily, said Mrs. Benefield. Let's take a look in the back room.
I can't let you do that, Flannery said, standing up straight. This is private property, and I refuse to give permission to search it.
Are you just going to stand there, Sheriff?
She asked angrily.
Henry?
The sheriff said sorrowfully.
I'm afraid it don't matter if this is private property or not. We're gonna take a look in that back room.
He walked toward the door.
I don't want you going in there, Flannery said angrily.
I'm sorry, Henry, said Blassingame,
and stepped through the door. He wasn't in the room long before he came out and said,
you want to look?
Indicating the room to Mrs. Benefield and Imogene and myself. The three of us walked through the door and stopped just inside. The room was very clean and organized. Stacks of feed and a lot of barrels filled the room.
but there was no body.
He was right there by the back door. Imogene was crying, tears running down her cheeks. It was right there,
pointing to a spot by the door.
Well, it ain't there now, exclaimed the sheriff. I reckon you all owe Henry an apology. Henry?
He turned and didn't see Flannery.
Where did he go?
I, in the meantime, was looking around the room. Sheriff, I've got an idea. Look in those barrels. It would be the perfect place to hide a body.
You look. I seen all I need to see. Ain't no dead body here, and that should settle it.
He turned and started out the room.
Clarence?
Mrs. Benefield's voice stopped him.
I believe you should find Henry and finish this investigation. I don't think he left because he was innocent, do you?
He didn't answer as he continued out the front door, shaking his head. The first four barrels were filled with grain, but the last barrel had a loose lid. I pulled it open, and inside was the body of Bert Ferguson.
Thank goodness, cried Imogen. I'm not losing my mind.
You young folks are to be commended for being such upright citizens. Most folks would have given up, but you didn't. You stuck to your story, and now the killer will be brought to justice. That is, if the sheriff can apprehend him.
Sheriff Blassingame did indeed apprehend Mr. Flannery, arrested him and put him in jail. As soon as word got around about what had happened, and that Imogene and I were responsible for getting the sheriff to arrest the killer, the town council decided to have a special day of celebration. It was a festive occasion that lasted until dusk, and something that I didn't much care for. But Imogene was enjoying it immensely, so I didn't say anything. After things settled down, she looked at me with those slate-blue eyes of hers, and I would have done anything she wanted.
"Do you still want to sit on the swing and talk to me?" she asked.
I sure do, stammered. I've got something important to ask you.
Yes,
she said.
Yes? What do you mean, yes?
You're going to ask me to marry you, and the answer is yes.
You really mean it? I asked, surprised. You'll marry me and move to the ranch with me?
Of course, silly. Where else would we live?
I need to get back to the ranch and prepare Wyatt for the surprise. Can we plan on getting married next Saturday?
Saturday will be fine. That'll give me time to make over one of my dresses. I guess I should tell my parents, too.
Okay, I'm going home now and get everything ready. See you Saturday.
I pecked her quickly on the lips, turned and headed to where Red was still sitting on the sidewalk. Chapter 9.
You've been sitting here all this time?
You told me to wait, so I waited, he exclaimed.
Well, come on, let's go home, that is, if you still want to go with me.
He stood, towering over me, glanced at the mountains to the east, shook his head and said real low,
"Them mountains don't feel so good no more. I go home with you."
Let's go get the wagon. You got any more things other than what you got there?
Left it all back in the cabin. Didn't know if I need it or not.
That's okay. We'll fix you up at home.
Mr. Garrett had the team hooked up when we got to the livery stable.
I seen you coming and figured you was ready to go. Gonna take him with you?
He nodded his head toward Red.
His name is Red Walker, and yes, I plan on taking him home with me.
I was just thinking out loud. You drive safe. See you when you come back to town.
It was a quiet trip to the ranch. Neither one of us said much. We pulled into the yard just before dark.
Can't see much tonight, so I'll show you around tomorrow. Come on in, and let's see if we can scare up some grub. You hungry?
I could eat little something.
He had to duck as he went through the door. Wyatt was standing at the stove, stirring something in a big pot. It sure smelled good. Red stood just inside the door holding his rifle.
Put your gun down and sit, I told him as I pulled out a chair.
Wyatt turned from the stove and looked at Red. Then he turned those cold, calculating eyes on me as if to ask, "Who is this fella?" "Wyatt, this is Red. Red Walker. And he's going to be staying with us for a spell."
"You know we can't afford no extra hands right now."
He turned back to the stove. "Red ain't a hand. He's a guest. We don't have to pay a guest."
"Where's our guest going to sleep?"
he asked, sounding a little hateful. "He can sleep in the bunkhouse. Lord knows there's plenty of room. What you got cooking in that pot? We're kind of hungry."
"It's chicken and dumplings, if you must know. And there ain't very much of it."
Looking over his shoulder at Red sitting there at the table.
"How about dishing up a couple of plates and let us try it out?"
He dished out two big helpings onto two plates and sort of slammed them down on the table, then turned back and put the pot back on the side of the stove to keep it warm.
"Is he mad at me?" Red asked, nodding toward Wyatt.
"Nah, he's always grumpy," I told him.
"Dig in. You do like chicken and dumplings, don't you?"
"I like chicken. I don't know what dumplings is."
"I'm sure you'll like it," I told him as I shoved a spoonful into my mouth. He looked at me with a questioning look but lifted a spoonful to his lips, hesitated, smelled, then opened his mouth and closed his lips on it.
"Mmm," he muttered around a mouthful, swallowed, then said, "This is really good."
He swiped a piece of bread in the plate, sopping up the juices, shoved it in his mouth, belched rather loudly, and proclaimed,
"That was one of the best meals I've had in a month of Sundays. Thanks, Mr. Snow."
"Name's Wyatt. Ain't no Mr. Snow here,"
Wyatt said, carrying the pot to the table and poured the remaining food onto Red's plate.
"Ain't you gonna eat?"
Red looked inquisitively at Wyatt.
"I ate a little sum for you all got here," Wyatt answered. "You go ahead and eat it."
"Thank you kindly, Miss O. I'm sorry." "Thanks, Wyatt. It was very good."
"You're welcome, I reckon,"
he said, turning back to the stove, but not before I noticed a smile on his face. Maybe this is going to work out after all, I thought.
"If you're finished," looking at Red, "I'll show you around a bit. Then we need to get started on the nightly chores."
"You bet I'm ready,"
he said, wiping his mouth with his sleeve, stood and said, "Mighty fine grub." We went outside and headed to the barn. The cow was bellowing to be milked. It was getting late in the day for her.
"She sure is making an awful sound," Red said. "You want I should milk her for you?"
"I'd appreciate that. And I can do some of the other things."
"Ain't you got no more hands?"
he inquired as he grabbed a bucket and sat on the stool, talking, calming bossy. "We have two men, Amos and Angus. They're out watching the cattle," I told them as I began mucking out one of the stalls, stacking it on a wheelbarrow. "Ever since Pa died, it's been mighty hard to make a go of it around here. Not that it was easy when he was alive."
"I am sure sorry about your Pa. Was you pretty close with him?"
"Yeah, I reckon we were as close as a son and his Pa can be. I only wish I could have been a better son while he was still here. But I'm going to be one now. I'm going to make this place pay off, even if it puts me in the grave with him."
"I believe you'll do it too," Red said with assurance in his voice. "You want I should carry this milk inside?"
"Nah, go dump it in the hog trough. We don't drink a lot of milk around here, and that hog needs to be fattened up, because come winter, we're going to invite him to a few meals."
I grabbed the wheelbarrow and headed out the back door as Red went out the front. My thought went to Imogene. Did I really ask her to marry me?
Am I ready for marriage and a family? Seems like I can't think of nothing else when I'm around her. I reckon I better get used to the idea, 'cause she ain't gonna let me out of it.
I dumped the mixture of manure and straw on the pile behind the barn and pushed the wheelbarrow back inside.
That's a pretty big hog you got there, Red said as he came in the barn door. Did you say you're gonna butcher him come winter?
Yeah. Wyatt told me he was out of bacon before I went to town. I'd sure miss having bacon with my eggs for breakfast, which, if you want, you can gather the eggs from the chickens.
I don't see no chicken pen. You got it hid someplace?
No. They're what we call free-range chickens. They'd run free in the daytime, then roost and lay their eggs in the barn. Kind of like an Easter egg hunt to find them, but it can be fun. You find them in one spot today, and then that old hen tries to outsmart you the next day by laying in a new spot.
Sounds like it might be a lot of fun. I give it a go.
Use the bucket you use for milking.
Okay.
He started pushing aside the hay that I had just spread in the stalls. Red?
Yeah.
It ain't gonna be that easy. Why don't you check in the law first, then work your way down here?
Sure.
He started up the ladder, swinging the bucket around one arm. I grabbed an old tin cup and started feeding the horses what little bit of grain we had left. Maybe I should have picked up some feed while I was in town. Probably won't be able to now with Flannery in jail. Surely somebody will take up where he left off with supply and feed for the county.
I found one, I heard Red holler. And here's another one. You was right. This is fun.
I smiled as I loaded another load, then rolled it out back and dumped it.
I found 8 eggs, Red bragged as he climbed down the ladder. You think I got 'em all?
You done real good for your first time, I told them. Now those go in the house.
Okay, but I'm not sure Mr. Snow likes me.
He gave you the last of the chicken and dumplings, didn't he? I asked.
Yeah, I reckon he did, all right. Does that mean he likes me? Red asked.
Let me put it this way, I said. If he didn't like you, he wouldn't have given you the last of that meal, and that's a fact.
Okay, he said,
and started the house swinging that bucket of eggs. Kind of reminded me of a little boy with his lunch pail. I'm glad I met that gentle giant. What am I saying, gentle? I helped him kill 3 men, yet here now he does seem friendly and, yes, gentle. I suppose everybody has a breaking point, I thought. I finished spreading fresh hay in the stalls, wiped my face with my bandana, and shoved it back in my pocket. Reckon I better tell Wyatt I'm getting married. How come I feel so nervous? Maybe it's because he's like a father to me. Well, fretting about it ain't getting it done.
Chapter 10
I started walking to the house when I heard hoofbeats. I turned and saw the sheriff riding into the yard. He reined up and dismounted. He looked tired and was breathing hard.
Howdy, Sheriff. What brings you out this late?
Breathing hard, he said.
Flannery escaped, and the last thing he said when I locked him up was how he was going to take care of you and your girlfriend.
What about Imogene? I asked, looking hard at him.
I checked. She wasn't home. Her ma said she didn't come home from choir practice. I went by the church, and it was locked up tight,
he said, hanging his head.
I was kind of hoping she was with you, but I see she ain't.
What made you think? Oh, never mind. Let me get my gun. Tell Wyatt, and I'll be ready to ride.
You got a fresh horse I can borrow? He asked. I rode mine pretty hard getting here.
Sure. Get the roan back in the corral. He's the best we got next to mine. While you're at it, saddle the big black for me. I hurried to the house, walked inside, grabbed my guns, and strapped them around my waist.
Ain't that our good-for-nothing Sheriff Blazing Game out yonder?
Asked Wyatt. Yes, that's him, I answered, and I'm going with him.
What for?
Asked Wyatt. He don't care much for you. Of course, he don't care much for anybody.
Imogene is missing. I've got to find her, I told him.
Who's Imogene?
He asked.
She's my fiancée, and I got to find her.
How come I ain't never heard of this Imogene?
Wyatt asked with a frown.
I ain't got no time to explain now. I gotta go.
Is that the little girl you was talking to in town?
Asked Red.
Yeah, that's her, I told him. Now I gotta get going.
Red stood up and proclaimed,
I'm going with you.
You don't have to do that, I told him. You don't owe me nothing.
I can decide who and what I owe. I'm going with you.
All right, I said. But we need to go now. Sheriff's waiting.
Doke, Red, Wyatt said. You both be careful. And Doke, you bring this Imogene back here so I can meet her.
Okay, so long. I removed my hat and wiped my forehead, then put it back on.
Here,
Wyatt handed me a sack.
In case you get hungry.
He placed his hand on my shoulder and whispered so only I could hear.
Please come back in one piece.
Will do. I turned and followed Red out the door.
He's coming with us?
Blassingame nodded toward Red.
Yes, he's coming, I told him.
I only saddled the two horses, he replied.
It won't take but a minute for Red to saddle Dynamite.
Dynamite?
He questioned with a raised eyebrow. It's a name I picked out when I was a kid. He's probably the gentlest horse in the place. In fact, I named all the horses. The roan you're riding is Sugarfoot, and my stallion is Midnight. Red came out of the barn leading a big speckled gelding. Dynamite was a big horse for a giant of a man. You got any idea which way he headed? I asked, mounting up.
I figured he headed for the Badlands,
Blassingame answered.
He used to run with a pretty bad bunch before he settled in Crockett.
I thought the Badlands was closed down ever since the Traveler came in and cleaned it out.
There are always a few rowdies that return, however. They don't stay long, he said. I reckon they're afraid the Traveler will come back.
All right, let's ride. I gave my Midnight the spurs and we were off racing out of the yard. It was a couple hours' ride to the Badlands. It used to be just that, a bad place where outlaws and killers would come to hide from the law. And one day, some of the leading citizens sent for a young gunfighter called the Traveler. It seems he had dedicated his life to taking care of trouble like this. It only took him one trip into the notorious Badlands, and those that were left standing lit out like their tails were on fire. Now we were headed there to see if Flannery had taken Imogene there.
If he's hurt her, he won't live to stand trial, I thought to myself.
The sun's golden rays were peeking over the horizon, casting an eerie glow on the entrance of the canyon, causing it to look like a dark cave opening. We arrived at the entrance of the canyon, which hid the dilapidated cabins and clapboard shacks. Blassingame held up his hand, indicating we should stop.
Let's leave the horses here and go on foot. And remember, he's desperate. He might kill the girl if we try to rush him.
If he touches one hair on her head, he's a dead man, I said through clenched teeth.
Try to keep a cool head,
Blassingame told me.
Otherwise, you'll be playing into his hands.
I've got a suggestion,
Red said quietly.
I'm listening,
said Blassingame.
Well, explained Red, this feller don't know me. I figure I can walk right up to him without him suspecting I'm anything other than a mountain man looking for a handout. You two can work around behind him while he's looking at me.
It just might work, Blassingame said. You sure you want to chance it? He might shoot you as soon as he spots you.
I'm willing to take that chance, Red told him. Besides, I owe Doke. I told you. You didn't owe me anything, I fussed at him. And I believe I told you I would decide who and what I owed.
All right, if you two have decided who owes what, we need to get going,
Blassingame said, sounding a little irritated. You be careful, Red, I told him as I placed my hand on his big shoulder. If things don't look safe, you back out of there pronto, understand?
Yeah, I hear you. Now get out of my way. I got a job to do.
He laid his rifle across his arms and headed down the incline into what could be a hornet's nest. He started whistling as soon as he got close to the first shack, as if he was just out for a stroll. He was almost to the shack when a shutter flew open and a rifle barrel appeared. Red stopped in his tracks and raised one hand while resting the rifle on the other.
Hold on there, partner, he said. I don't mean no harm. I'm just looking for a little bit of something to quench this hunger in my belly. You happen to have a piece of jerky, maybe?
He slowly took a step closer, and then another, until he was about 10 feet from the window.
I'm warning you one last time, hollered Flannery. I'm going to put a bullet in your eye if you don't turn around.
While Red held Flannery's attention, the sheriff and I had headed out, him to the right and me to the left. I reached the shack before Blassingame and slid as close to the wall as possible. I could hear Flannery's voice through the thin walls. There was a problem I hadn't counted on. I was thinking about what to do when Blassingame appeared from the right side of the building. There's no back door, I whispered, and nodded toward the building.
I see that, he said. Why don't you sneak around, staying as close as you can to the wall? Maybe you can get close enough to grab his rifle. I'll go this way and do the same.
All right, I told him. But if he spots either one of us, he may hurt Imogene.
Understood, he nodded. And if it looks too dangerous, let Red continue his talking to him.
I started walking around the corner of the shack. Then as I got closer to the front, I plastered my body next to the wall. It was slow going, but I was determined to get Imogene out of there. As I stuck my head around the corner, Red saw me, blinked, and continued to talk as if nothing was out of the ordinary.
Please, mister. Red was sounding pitiful, like a little child asking for a treat. I'm mighty thirsty and hungry. Maybe just a drink of water. That would be the neighborly thing to do. Don't you think?
I heard the report of the rifle, saw Red grab his head and slump to the ground. I rushed around the corner and grabbed the barrel of the rifle and pulled it as hard as I could. Flannery was jerked halfway out the window as he continued to hold on to his weapon. I released my grip on the rifle, grabbed his shirt, and pulled him the rest of the way out of the window. He fell, still clutching his rifle, which I quickly placed my foot on, causing him to cry out in pain. I glanced away for a second and saw the sheriff was kneeling over Red. I watched as he put his ear next to Red's nose, touched his chest with his hand, looked at me, and shook his head. At that moment, I could have snuffed out this killer's life without any regrets. However, right now I had to find Imogene.
Go ahead, Blassingame walked over. I got this scoundrel. You see if the girl's all right.
What about Red? I asked, nodding toward Red's body. Blassingame shook his head.
He's gone. Another killing to add to Flannery's debt. He'll hang for sure.
I glanced at Red's body, then went to the front door and twisted the knob. It was locked. I walked back to the window and peeked inside. It was too dark to see anything. I climbed through the window, stopped for my eyes to adjust to the darkness, and scanned the room. Imogene wasn't there. I walked over, unlocked the door, opened it, and stepped out. I went to where the sheriff had Flannery handcuffed. Flannery was sitting up as best he could with the cuffs holding his hands behind him.
Where is she?
I knelt down in front of him.
Where's who? He asked. I don't know what you're talking about.
Where's Imogene?
I grabbed his shirt and lifted him off the ground.
I don't know any Imogene. Let me down. I'm telling you, I don't know what you're talking about.
Imogene is the girl who accused you of killing your friend, Mr. Ferguson. You remember her, don't you?
Sure, he said.
I remember the girl, but I never knew her name.
Did you or didn't you threaten to get even with her and walk her here?
Sure, I said that, he agreed, but I was a little upset about being accused of murder.
You're saying you didn't kill Ferguson?
Blasingame asked.
I didn't say that, he said, shaking his head, but it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill him.
How about that man laying over there?
The sheriff nodded toward Red.
Did you mean to kill him, or was that an accident too?
I knew he was with you, and I couldn't let you take me back, he whined. I don't want to hang.
Well, you're going to hang for sure, and that's a fact,
the sheriff said emphatically. I walked over and knelt beside Red's body. I placed my hand on his chest and felt something. Red, I said, are you all right? He groaned and rubbed his hand across his face. Doak, is that you? He asked.
It's me, buddy. Are you okay?
I can't see nothing, and I got one great big headache. I can't see, Doak. I can't see. Just lie still and I'll get some water. I started to stand.
I'll get it, said Blasingame. You stay with him. I sure thought he was a goner.
Doak, Red said, reaching out his hand. I'm scared, Doak. I took his hand and squeezed. I know, pard, but don't worry about it right now. We'll get you to a doctor and he'll fix you up good as new. Just rest now.
Here's some water and a bandana.
The sheriff handed me a canteen and a blue bandana. Thanks. I poured some water on the cloth and wiped the blood from Red's head and face. That feels good, he said. Thanks. You're a good friend. And you're an even better friend, I told him. You shouldn't have done what you did. I couldn't have lived with myself if I hadn't. Sheriff Blasingame came walking up holding the reins of all the horses.
I found Flannery's horse a couple shacks down. You ready to get going?
Sure, we're ready, ain't we, Red? I'll help you up. I pulled and helped Red to his feet. He swayed and I thought he was going to go down, but he gained control and I led him to his horse. Lift your foot and I'll guide you into the stirrup. Grab the saddle horn, a little to your left. That's it. Now I'll help you. He got settled in the saddle and I climbed aboard my horse. I grabbed the reins and nodded at the sheriff who held the reins to Flannery's horse. We headed back toward town, slowly. Chapter 11. We arrived back in town around 9 in the morning. The shopkeepers and clerks were open and doing a brisk business. Folks stopped what they were doing and came outside to gawk at us as we rode and stopped in front of the jail. I helped Red out of the saddle and guided him inside the jail. Sit here, Red. I pushed him down into the sheriff's chair. I'm going to go find Doc Honeycutt, I told them. You wait here with the sheriff. I'll be back as soon as I can. Blasingame was coming out from locking Flannery in the cell and said,
Go ahead. Me and Red will be fine here.
I hurried through the door, and as I turned to the right, I bumped into Imogene, almost knocking her down. I quickly grabbed her to keep her from falling, pulling her close to me. Imogene, I said, looking into her eyes, you're okay.
Of course I'm okay, she said, leaning away from me. Why wouldn't I be okay?
Sheriff Blasingame said you were... I started to explain, but stopped and said... Never mind that right now. I've got to find the doctor.
Why do you need a doctor?
She asked as we stepped away from each other.
Are you hurt?
It's not me. It's Red, I explained as I started to walk away.
Who is Red? She asked. Is he that giant of a man who helped in town yesterday?
That's him. Now I got to go find the doctor. I'll see you later.
Hold on, and I'll go with you.
Grabbing my arm and falling in beside me.
What's the matter with Red? Was it...
He got shot in the head and now he can't see.
Who shot him? Was it Mr. Flannery?
Yes, it was Flannery. Now come on. I gotta find the doctor. By the way, where were you last night?
That's a rather long story, she said, breathing hard and racing to keep up with my long strides. I'll tell you after we find the doctor.
There he is, coming out of his office. Hey, Doc! Doc!
I hollered, and he looked up and saw us.
Hello, Doc and Imogene, isn't it?
He tipped his hat to Imogene.
Doc, you need to come to the sheriff's office. Somebody's been hurt, I spoke in a hurry.
Let me get my bag.
He turned and went back inside and came out carrying his satchel. He took off at a brisk pace, and Imogene and I had to hurry to keep up with him. We reached the jail, and the doctor went right in with the two of us right behind him.
Where's the patient?
He asked Sheriff Blassingame.
He's in one of the cells, Blassingame told him. Didn't have no other place to put him. You could have brought him to my office.
He headed to the cell area. We waited in the office, silently praying for my new friend. The doctor came out wiping his hands in a white handkerchief.
I can't make any promises, but I believe if we give it time, he will regain his sight. We don't know a lot about injuries like this, but as I stated, more than likely, he'll regain his sight.
Doc, Doc, you out there?
Red hollered.
I'm here, buddy, I answered. I'll be there in a couple minutes.
Imogene, you want to meet my friend? I asked her.
Sure, she said, and grabbed my hand, letting me lead her back to the cell where Red was lying in a bunk.
Red, I began, glancing over at Flannery in the cell across the aisle. This is Imogene. Imogene, this is my friend, Red Walker.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Walker,
she said, stepping close to him.
Shucks, he stuttered a little. You don't got to call me Mr. I'm just plain old Red. Doc, I sure could use a drink of water.
Sure, Red. I'll get you some. I'll be right back.
Imogene, I heard Red say. You and Doc are...
Their voices drifted off as I went in the front room to get some water.
How's he doing?
Asked Blassingame.
Just getting him some water, I told him. Him and Imogene are getting acquainted. I want to tell you and her how sorry I am for treating you two the way I did when all this started, he said, hanging his head.
I appreciate that, but I reckon you ought to tell Imogene, I told him, picking up the bucket of water and heading back to the cell area.
I'm going to do just that, Sheriff said. I surely am.
Here you go, Red. I got you a drink. Setting the bucket on the floor and filling the dipper full.
How about giving me a drink? Asked Flannery. I'm sure thirsty.
I'll get to you after Red has a drink, I told him. I put my hand behind Red's head and said, Let me lift you a little so you don't spill it all over you.
Thanks, Doc. You're a real friend. He slurped the water until the dipper was empty.
You want some more? I asked as I lay his head back down.
Thanks. That was enough for now. You probably should give my neighbor a drink. We wouldn't want him to die of thirst.
No, we sure wouldn't want that to happen. I filled the dipper and handed it to Flannery.
That's real decent of you, Walker,
he told me while trying to drink through the bars of the cell, spilling the majority of it.
I'm having a little bit of trouble, as you can see. How about getting the sheriff to open this door long enough for me to drink this water?
I reckon you'll have to make do with the way things are, at least for now. Taking the dipper back and placing it in the bucket. Imogene, I said, I think you and I need to talk. Red, if you'll excuse us, we need to go talk.
Sure, Doc. You too. Go ahead. Imogene, I'm sure glad I got to meet you, although I wish I could see you.
You'll be seeing her real soon, I told him. If you need anything, holler for the sheriff. I took Imogene's hand and we walked into the office.
Miss Imogene, Sheriff began, I'm mighty sorry about the way I treated you when you came and told me about Flannery. I hope you'll forgive me.
I don't know if I should, Sheriff,
she said hatefully.
I'm not the first person you've disrespected in this town.
I know, ma'am, and I'm trying to turn over a new leaf and be a sheriff that everyone respects. It would sure make me feel better if you could find it in your heart to give me that chance.
I can do that on one condition, she told him.
What's the condition? He asked.
I forgive you on the condition that I see an improvement in your actions.
I reckon I can do that, he said, wiping his hand across his face. Thank you.
I nodded to the sheriff, and we went out the door. Just go sit on the bench in front of the general store, and you can tell me where you were last night.
Okay,
she answered. We sat on the bench, and I turned toward her with a questioning look on my face.
Well, she began, this is what happened. I was on my way back from choir practice when I tripped and bumped my head. I don't remember anything until my ma was shaking me, asking me if I was all right.
Are you all right? I asked, concerned.
I'm fine, but I do have a headache. The doctor said I would probably have it for a couple of days. Ma said the sheriff came by asking for me last night. Do you know why he wanted me?
He thought Flannery had kidnapped you when he broke out of jail. Thank goodness he didn't. You might have more than a headache if he had.
I didn't know Flannery had broken out of jail, she said. Is that where Red got shot? While you were bringing back Flannery?
She reached her hand out and ran it through her hair.
Are you sure you're okay? I asked, concerned.
Like I told you, just a little headache. I told my mother about us getting married, and she's very excited and happy for us. She did suggest, and that's what it is, a suggestion, but she suggested we wait until the middle of summer. I told her I would talk to you, and we would decide together and let her know. What do you want to do?
I think you know what I want to do, but I'll do whatever you want to do. Then again, it would give me time to work on the house and get it a fit place for a female to live in. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I love you and want to marry you more than anything in the world, but perhaps I was a little hasty when I asked you to marry me. The house really needs some fixing up, and of course we need to figure out where Wyatt is going to sleep. I'm not so sure he's going to want to sleep in the bunkhouse.
Where has he been sleeping?
He sleeps in Pa's bedroom. We ain't got but two bedrooms.
I don't know why he can't continue to sleep there. After all, we won't be needing two bedrooms, will we?
She asked with that twinkle in her eyes. No, I assured her. We sure won't need two bedrooms. But that still leaves the problem of the house not being ready for you to move in.
Are you saying you want to wait?
I don't want to wait, but I do want the place to be fit for you.
All right, then. We'll wait. But how long?
I reckon your ma had the right idea. How about June 1st?
That sounds perfect. I always wanted to be a June bride.
Then it's settled. June 1st. That'll give me plenty of time. And there's one more thing.
What's that?
I love you, Imogene Cooper. And that's a fact. Epilogue. Flannery's trial was held a month later when the circuit judge came to town. The trial lasted only 3 hours. The jury voted unanimously that he'd be hanged, but not in our town. He was transferred to the county seat by the newly elected Sheriff Blassingame, where his sentence was to be carried out 1 week after his trial. Red Walker regained his sight and decided to go back to his beloved mountains, where he met and married an Indian chief's daughter. Doak and Imogene got married June 1st and moved into their newly renovated home. Wyatt Snow gladly moved to the bunkhouse, he said,
because I don't figure newlyweds need no company.
The ranch prospered and became one of the largest in the territory.
The Walkers had three girls and one boy whom they named after Doak's pa, Frank Walker II. I do believe his pa would be proud. This is M.D. Rhodes' first novel, but he has plans for many more. If you enjoyed his story, the best way to show your appreciation is to give a review for this story on Amazon. And even if you didn't enjoy it, you could still give a review. All reviews are taken seriously and considered. This has been Doak Walker, a Western short, written by M.D. Rhodes, narrated by Jack Sockett. Copyright November 28, 2015 by M.D. Rhodes. Production copyright 2016 by Outlaws Publishing, LLC.